Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Shaiwitz, and today we'll be studying Shoftim, Perek Chaf Aleph, Chapter 21. We begin Perek Chaf Aleph with the last installment of both the story of Pilegesh B'Givah and also of the Book of Shoftim as a whole. And this tragic story that we have spent the last 2 days discussing is about a man from Levi who spends a night in Giv'ah, a town that is in the portion of land of Binyamin. At night, the house is surrounded by people from Binyamin who demand that the host throw out this man from Levi who is his guest. Instead, the Ish Levi steps up and throws out his concubine who is raped repeatedly by these men. The Ish Levi responds later by cutting up her body, her dead body, and sending a piece to each tribe in Israel to let them know about the atrocity that has happened. This results in a civil war against the tribe of Binyamin that results in the death of 40,000 from the other tribes of Israel and the complete wipeout of the tribe of Binyamin with the exception of 600 men. There's no way to sugarcoat this story. This is one of the lowest points in all of Tanakh. And in this installment of it, in Perek Chaf Aleph, the people begin to recognize the implications of what's happened and what they've done. If you begin in Pasuk Gimel, the people cry out and they say, Vayomru, Lama Adonai Elohei Yisrael, Haitazot Yisrael, Lehipaked Hayom Yisrael, Shevet Echad. And they turn to God here and they say, how did this happen? Why did this happen that we've lost a tribe? There are only 600 men left. What's going to happen? And in Pasuk Vav, Vayinachmu b'nei Yisrael el Binyamin achiv. So ultimately, as some time passes, they begin to resolve their anger against Binyamin and recognize the implications of what's happened here. And they say, Nigda hayom shevet echad miYisrael. A tribe of Israel has actually been cut off. Mana aselahem linotarim linashim. What should we do so that those 600 men who are left can marry, can reproduce? See, there's a problem here. And that's the end of this pasuk. Va'anachnu nishbanu ba'ashem levilti teit lahem mibnotenu lanashim. We made a shvua, we swore that we, as an act against what Binyamin did, we would not give our children, our daughters, to them to marry. So here there are 600 men from Binyamin, and there is no one for them to marry because all the other tribes have sworn up and down that they wouldn't give their children over. In the aftermath, they also discuss something else. And the other issue that they bring up is that when they gather together at Mitzpah trying to figure out how to organize this war against Binyamin, they said that anyone who doesn't come and anyone who doesn't participate in this will be killed. And now they try to figure out, well, was there anyone who wasn't here? And even before we talk about what happens next, I just want to note here that this really seems to be not the right approach. Instead of doing, they're beginning with almost a cheshbon nefesh, like bringing a reckoning of their souls. And instead of continuing on that path and thinking about, like, where did we go wrong? Instead, they're looking for like almost an easy solution and not the real solution. Well, maybe things went wrong because not everybody was here. And instead of examining their own souls, they look outward. But they discover that the people from Yavesh Gilad, which is on the east of the Jordan, did not come. And this is in Pasuk Chet, Vayomru, Mi Echad Mishifte Yisrael Asher Lo Ala El Hashem HaMitzpah, who actually didn't come? V'hinei Lo Ba Ish El HaMachaneh Mi Yavesh Gilad El HaKahal. This town of Yavesh Gilad did not come. And this explodes into the second civil war, where 12,000 soldiers wipe out Yavesh Gilad with the exception of 400 women. And it is there that they uncover the first solution to their problem. These 400 unmarried women from Yavesh Gilad can marry 400 of the men from Binyamin, because those people didn't participate in this swearing off of the intermarriage between the tribes with Binyamin. Okay, but they recognize now that there are still 200 men left from the tribe of Binyamin who have no one to marry. This is in Pasuk Tetzayin, Vayomru Zikneh Ha'ida, Ma Na'aseh Le'notarim Le'nashim, Ki Nishmeda Mi Binyamin Isha. Va'anachnu lo nuchal latet lehem nashim mibnotenu ki nishba'u b'nei Yisrael lemor arur noten isha leBinyamin. Okay, so we still have these 200 men from Binyamin, and we don't have, there are no more women from Binyamin because the women from Binyamin were all killed. And we can't give our own children because we made this swear. So then they come up with another creative solution. And this is in Pasuk Yutet. Vayomru, hinei chag Hashem b'shilo miyamim yamima. Wait, there's a holiday in Shiloh, and this seems like this is a agricultural holiday for Hashem in Shiloh. That's the place where the Mishkan is. And in that, at that holiday, there will be an opportunity for these men to find women. But before we even talk about that, I just want to note that at the end of Pasuk Yutet, it actually contains directions how to get to Shiloh, to the Mishkan in Shiloh, which underscores again that people didn't know how to get to the Mishkan. There was such a lapse in their Avodat Hashem that people weren't going to Shiloh. And perhaps that was because of situations like Pesel Micha, the idolatry that Micha had established. And that was likely one of other, you know, cultic shrines that people had created. So Shiloh is so obscure at this time that in Pasuk Yutet we even get directions. But what does this holiday in Shiloh have to do with the women? So this continues in Pasuk Chaf. Vayitzavu et b'nei Binyamin lemor. So they command these 200 men who are left from Binyamin, and they say, lichu, ve'aravtem bakramim. Go and hide in the kramim. And it's an interesting word that's chosen here. It's almost like hide. It's a word that we might use in war. You hide in order to ambush. But who are they ambushing here? Uraitem, go see. V'hine im yetzu benot shilo lachu b'machalot. Part of this holiday was that the daughters, the unmarried women, would dance in Shiloh and they would play their instruments. V'yatzatem min hakramim. They would come out into the vineyards. V'chataftem lachem ish ish to mibnot Shiloh. And then each man, these 200 men from Binyamin, would be able to chataftem, like to grab, to steal a woman from these dancing women in Shiloh, and they would be able to take them home. V'haya ki yavo avotam o achehem lariv aleinu. So when the fathers or brothers of these women who are at Shiloh will come and argue, and they'll say, how did you take these women? So you'll answer them by saying that these men had no one to marry because of our shvua, and we need to give these girls to them as a gift. And don't worry about being over on the vow that you made, that you said that you wouldn't give your daughters to the men of Binyamin, because don't worry, you didn't give them. Instead, the men of Binyamin took them. So you are okay in terms of the vow you made. And I do think here in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayasu chen b'nei Binyamin, this is exactly what Binyamin did. Vayasu nashim l'misparam, they were able to marry women according to the numbers as they needed. Min hamacholot asher gazalu, from the instrument players that they had taken or stolen. And I think there's a certain throwback here to the story of Yiftach and his daughter, because in both cases, we had a group of people or a person who made a vow and later comes to regret their vow, but fulfills it in a way where there are women with instruments who are to some degree either taken or something happens to them that feels somewhat against their will. And in some ways, I think this story is a resolution, meaning it's part of what makes Binyamin not be wiped out as a tribe of Israel. But on the other hand, the way that it happened is uncomfortable. And I think that the Tanakh is giving that to us by using words like gazalu, that were stolen, or using the word that's used for an ambush. Ultimately, Shevet Binyamin was allowed to intermarry with the other tribes. And according to the Mishnah, we celebrated this with the joyous holiday of Tu B'Av on the 15th of Av. And on this date, the unmarried women of Yerushalayim would dress in white and go out and dance in the vineyard. And this was a transformation from the very painful time to a positive marking of our moving out of that very painful time period. And with the end of this story, we have concluded the three sections of Sefer Shoftim. We began with the holes in the conquest in Eretz Yisrael, leading to the mixing with the Canaanite tribes and the religious deterioration of the people. Then we saw the cycle of the Shoftim. Each time the people would cry out and do tshuva as a response to oppression that they're suffering from an enemy. Hashem would then send a charismatic leader who would save them from their troubles for a period of time until the cycle would end up repeating itself. And we ended with two haunting stories that are placed here at the end of the book because they characterize this particular generation. First of all, the story of Pesel Micha, the idolatry that was built by Micha, which was stolen and ultimately became a fixture in Shevet Dan. And also the story of Pilegesh B'Giv'ah, the concubine in Giv'ah, whose rape led to a civil war that almost wipes out the entire tribe of Binyamin. And the very last pasuk of Sefer Shoftim is the thesis of the Sefer. Bayamim ha'im ein melech b'Yisrael, ish hayashar be'enav yaseh. In those days, there was no king of Israel, and everybody did what was right in their own eyes. And Sefer Shoftim is pretty clear in its message. The people need the stability and the centralization of a king. But let's raise two questions that I think have been hanging over us for a while. First of all, if a king is so ideal, why wasn't this set up at the outset? Both Moshe and Yeshua functioned almost like kings. So why didn't Yeshua, with the help of Hashem, set up a leader like Moshe did before his death? And secondly, again, if a king is so ideal, then why do we see so many problems with the kings over the next centuries, leading ultimately up to the Churban Bayit? While Shoftim, which is the book of Judges, tells us all the problems with the system of Shoftim, of the judges, Melachim, the book of Kings, highlights all the problems with the kings. So, is a king a magic bullet? Is that what we were missing the whole time? So here is my thesis. There is no magic bullet for successful government. And it's not really my thesis. In fact, the Netziv in Sefer Dvarim, in his explanation of why appointing a king is not actually formulated as a positive commandment, explains that there's no one form of government that is right for every generation. Here's a quote. There are states that cannot support the opinion of the monarchy, and then there are states that without a king are like a ship without a captain. He continues that particularly appointing a king is something that can only happen when it's what the people want and ultimately what the people demand. A king, or even a king-like leader, wasn't the right fit after the death of Yeshua. The Jewish people had entered the land and they wanted to spend time in their nachala with their tribes. They wanted to focus on their own communities and their local governments. And there's a very positive side to this, as each Shevet does have a unique identity and rooting themselves in their own portion of land with their tribe, setting up a local government was an important part of the process. Also, another positive for the Shoftim system, as Gidon argued, without a king, we really could feel the hand of Hashem and turn more immediately towards him. Sometimes a king can be a barrier towards recognizing that things are really happening because of Hashem. And we saw this play out in the times of Otniel, Ehud, Devorah, and even Gidon. We got to see all the positives of that very immediate reaction where we knew how are we doing and what we need to do to improve. But on the other hand, this system, the Shoftim system, came with a lot of downsides. The focus on family and tribal community and local politics led to an apathy to the experience of all the other tribes and the nation. Ultimately, as we saw from the last two stories, the justice system and the centralized system of Avodat Hashem, right, the Mishkan, Shiloh, it broke down. And instead, we met ad hoc courts and unemployed wandering Levites. We disintegrated into a state of moral decay where unspeakable crimes happened and they were punished in unspeakable ways. That being said, I still maintain my thesis, which is that there is no magic bullet for a successful government. kingship will suffer from its own problems, like excess, totalitarian leadership, forgetting Hashem. The only magic bullet is the long haul of Avodas Hashem that involves humility, self-reflection, and concern for others. No particular form of leadership can get us there. It's only our own hard work and Hashem's help. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat, Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.